Hello and welcome to Spotlight, as sunny as a painting of those flowers by Van Gogh.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, the wonderful large-scale open-air production of Midsummer Night's Dream is now just a couple of months away. We have a catch-up with director Sharon Walker. More about the Ramsey Music Society's summer programme and a glance into 2026. And how you could help fund a short, locally made film with a positive angle on the reality of cancer treatment. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in planning, hoping to create or would really like to put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, social media, all the rest. You know the list. You know the address, I hope. Howard Kane at maxradio.com. Kane with an E. Spotlight at maxradio.com. Love to hear from you. Anything you'd like to be featured, just get in touch and we will see what we can organise. We'll do the first last for a change. Dark Avenue Films is a short film production company based between Reading and the Isle of Man, run by two lifelong cinephiles, we're told, Patrick and Bethany, who connected over their love of films and the genre when they met at the University of York. They've made numerous short films and documentaries since starting out in 2018, including a portrait of Manx harpist Mira Royal. Their next project, due to get underway a bit later this year, explores something which affects all of us in one way or another during our lives, cancer and its treatment, particularly for those living on the Isle of Man. Filming for this latest project is due to start later this summer. Everything's pretty much in place, but you can help fund it. Expensive business making films. Patrick and Bethany spoke to Manx Radio's Amy Griffiths.
Yeah, so the film, it's called Shutter Speed. It's a short film. It's kind of a drama comedy. It's set in 2007 and it tells the story of a mother and daughter as they take the trip from the Isle of Man to the Wirral for the mum's cancer treatment. And it's basically all seen through the daughter's eyes, who's 10. The daughter, she's obsessed with photography, and through the photography that she's taking on this trip, I think she starts to see how much her mother is kind of protecting her from the reality of what's going on, but also, you know, it's a journey for both of them, and it's daughter's understanding of how she needs to support her mum, as well as how her mum needs to support her in this situation.
And it's based on a real-life personal experience of yours, Patrick, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. Back in 2007, when the film was set, yeah, me and my mum took the same journey. I was taken out of school for 10 days, and we went to stay at the Bebbington Hotel, which is where we're filming part of the film, in the actual hotel, and my mum got treatment at Clatterbridge. And so it was, for me, this unique kind of experience, because basically I went over and it was 15 minutes a day of radiotherapy treatment for my mum. And so most of the day was spent on holiday. And I think at the time I didn't really understand the weight of what was going on behind the scenes and how scary it must have been for my mum. And so this film was really born out of me looking back on that, not only looking at how odd it is that when you go for cancer treatment from the Isle of Man, you have to leave the Isle of Man and essentially go on holiday for treatment.
I suppose then, at the time, did you feel, how much were you aware of what your mum was actually going through?
I don't think I was particularly aware at all. I think my mum did such a good job of making it was a very enjoyable time away from me. Not just because I got to get out of school and not have to do any schoolwork for a period of time, but also that, you know, it's a nice little area, that it's like Port Sunlight and Chester and Liverpool. And so it was quite exciting, really, to get out of school to do that. And when you're a child and you're around this kind of, you know, at Clatterbridge Cancer Centre, they make a big fuss of you because you're a child and you're in this space that could be quite scary and quite dark, really. And so I think in some ways everyone makes the experience, you're kind of insulated from the reality of the experience. So to me, it was just this holiday, and I just thought of it as this holiday for many years. And it was only thinking about the fact that my mom experienced this thing. She experienced this thing, and I'm looking at it now. And so it kind of, I thought it was a really interesting kind of thing to explore and a unique thing to the Isle of Man. And that's always been a big priority of ours, is that we're filmmakers, but that the Isle of Man has to play a massive part in what we do, because I think there's so many experiences that are unique to living on an island. And I think this is one of them, really.
And we should say as well, your mum's treatment was successful and she's doing really well now, isn't she? And she's, yeah, really well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. My mum is still with us and all good. And that's a major part of why we did this project as well, is that I think cancer is more often than not portrayed as being 100% lethal. And it's this kind of this media depiction of this, you know, absolutely lethal disease. And in my experience, that isn't the case. And I know it's not the case for a lot of other people. And I know people who've had loved ones die from cancer, and they've really embraced the fact that this isn't a doom and gloom story about how once you have cancer, it's a death sentence for you. And that was very important. You know, there were people along the way who maybe gave us notes that you might, well, have you thought about having it end in this sad way? And it felt dishonest to both of us. It felt dishonest to turn something that in reality did not end tragically into something that ends tragically on the off chance that it might make the audience cry, because in my opinion, it just won't, you know.
And Bethany, you have had some early really good positive reactions to the script that you've written, haven't you?
We have. We've been really trying to get the word out about this project, and we've sent it to some people. The biggest one being our executive producer, Derv LaWalsh, who's a Emmy and BAFTA winning director herself. She directed some of Bad Sisters TV show, so episodes of Fargo and Little Dorrit, and she's got an extensive CV. And we'd sent her some of our films previously that she'd been really excited about. And when we had this script ready, we felt like it was a project that could make a lot of impact, and that she might be interested to be involved with it. And it really connected with her on a personal level, and to the extent that she wanted to come on board as an exec producer for the project, which has meant a huge lot to us, because that sort of reputation of someone of that standing in the industry, you know, vouching for you and saying this is a film that should be made and I know that you guys can do it, has been hugely important for us. We also had the script get to the semi-finals of the Blue Crack Screenplay Competition, which is a big international competition. It's an absolute honour to be involved with. And we won a pitching competition at the Kingston Film Festival last month, which has given us some money towards our kit hire for the project. So it's all these things are starting to come together. We've also had support from the Steam Packet, so we're going to be filming on one of the boats as part of our title sequence for the film. So thank you so much to the Steam Packet for your support so far, and to LT Holdings as well. They've been an investor for the project, which has really helped get us off the ground.
And so you've won some money towards it, but these projects, they never come cheap, do they? Especially on the Isle of Man. So how can people help support you and get this project off the ground?
Well, we're actually launching a Kickstarter for this project for the remainder of our production funds today at midday. So the biggest way you can get involved is to take a look at the page. There's a video that Patrick's done explaining a bit about the film, and there's the team that we've got together so far, and a bit more about the story, and some wonderful perks that people can get if they choose to get involved and support the project financially. You can get a signed copy of the script. You can actually get some printed photos that the daughter character takes in the film to keep for yourself, and you can even visit the set if you want to get really involved. So there's lots on offer, but even if you're not able to support yourself, sharing the Kickstarter far and wide will really help get the message out there about the project. We know from people we've spoken to across the last 6 months or so working on this that it's a story that lots of people really feel needs to be told. It's refreshing to have a story about cancer that's not all doom and gloom, and that shows a different a different experience than you typically see in films. So the more people hear about the project, the more likely it is that we can hit our fundraising goal and make this film a reality.
Sounds like a wonderful project. And if you've seen any of Dark Avenue's previous films, you'll know it will be beautifully shot and made. Why not help them out and get that exclusive early access? Plus, the pride of knowing you helped make it happen.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Another large-scale artistic project which will be taking place later this year is an outdoor promenade performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream, being staged as part of the 60th anniversary celebrations of the Manx Amateur Drama Association. The play, or at least the staging of the play, is the brainchild of, and being directed by, Sharon Walker. We spoke to Sharon numerous times about it since its early days and pretty much its inception. But when she dropped by the other day for an update, I put it to Sharon, the whole thing was now getting very real.
Exactly, 2 years in the making, this project. So we started thinking about this in January last year, where I happened to see His Excellency at a dinner and said to him, wouldn't it be great if we did a production in the grounds of Government House? Wouldn't it be great? And he said, yes, it would be great. You are more than welcome to do so. So I took that as a bit of a challenge and thought, right, what could we do? What could we do that would absolutely make the gardens in Government House stand out? So a play about a wood in the midsummer night seemed absolutely appropriate, and that's how A Midsummer Night's Dream was born. I had the opportunity to start talking to the RSC about how we might do it. They were very keen for us to think about how we would do this in a local setting and make the play our own. So we've done a lot of work on making sure that the play absolutely embraces the surroundings of Government House, but also picks up some lovely Manx details. So our fairies are all Manx names, and we have a lot of local performers, not just performing the play itself, but we have three choirs, Rock Vanning, Kieran Kuzak and Mines Ashanti, who are also providing the musical interlude transitions, as this is going to be a promenade performance, so that the audience will get the opportunity to see the gardens in all their full glory. For anybody who's sort of an experienced outside theatre goer will know that the performances continue unless it's severe weather warning. So we're asking audiences to dress appropriately. If the weather looks like it's beautiful, then bring suntan lotion. If the weather looks like it's going to rain, bring your cagoule. The one thing we do ask is people don't bring umbrellas, because that would spoil the view for everybody else. You also need to be fairly portable, because you'll be moving around the garden. So a good camp chair that you can easily transport around will be a real perfect thing to bring along.
A cast of thousands, we were saying before. How many are in the cast? I know it is a large cast. Yep. And the choirs as well, obviously.
Yeah, so there are 35 people in the cast. You may recall, Howard, that earlier in the year we did a series of Mastering Shakespeare workshops where we went into schools, and we also hosted an adult workshop for people interested in being in the dream. And I was very keen that anybody who had showed an interest would be involved, and that's exactly what's happened. So everybody who came to our dream workshop and registered and auditioned is in the performance. And that ranges from people who you'll have seen on the Gaiety stage lots of times in lots of plays and musicals, to people who it's their first time acting, lots of young people who have never worked with Shakespeare before, but also some people who maybe did Shakespeare or acting a long time ago at school and have just decided they're going to come and give it a go. So we have a full range of experience, but that's what makes it really exciting.
Oh, it is. I think it's the whole thing. And the fact that you're actually outside as well, so you're not sort of proscenium arch and all the rest of it. You're out there in the open with the... I mean, how far away will the audience be?
They won't be very far away. They'll be able to see the whites of the performer's eyes, that's for sure. And then over the next couple of weeks, we've been rehearsing at the Empress Hotel. You'll see us out on the prom rehearsing, because I'm very keen for the participants to actually get a feel for what it's like to perform outside. We've been doing exercises on physicality and voice projection and what have you, but actually to be able to perform and be okay with it being a bit windy or maybe a bit rainy or what have you is really important, so that when we come to the performance, nothing is unexpected.
And with regards to the performance, the great thing with Shakespeare, of course, is you can do it so straight, as it were, in a very classical way, or you can give it as many twists as you want. Sometimes something a very, very avant-garde or obscure, sometimes, as I say, absolute classic. You're following pretty much, as you say, you're giving it a Manx twist, and it's sort of set in the 80s, is that right?
Absolutely. So going back to suggestion that I needed to make the production my own, I grew up in the 80s. I'm an absolute big fan of 80s fashion and music. So we've gone with using the 80s. So this means that our Oberon is Adamant. Our Lysander is George Michael. Our Titania is Tina Turner from Beyond the Thunderdome. So really classic, iconic icons that you will recognise from the 1980s. And then, of course, with the musical interludes, using Rock Vanin for some 80s power ballads for our Athens scenes works really, really well. Using Annie's choir for the fairy scenes just works really perfectly with that lovely Manx Gaelic music. And then using Mines of Shanty for those lovely mechanicals, those working class individuals, again, has a really good tone to it.
Lovely. And the Cajuns, will they be singing in Manx Gaelic or singing in English?
In Manx Gaelic. Yeah. Yes. I should also mention that we've got Manx Gateway involved as well. So they're going to be involved in just a special little scene for us as well. And we have fairies that will be 2 years old, and we'll have fairies that are maybe a little bit more mature. So you'll have a full range of the fairy spectrum on display at the play.
The Lieutenant Governor himself said, I think, from the beginning that he'd like, not too big, but he'd like to be sort of actively involved in some way.
Well, I don't want to give too much away, really, but there is a chance that he may be involved in the production for sure.
It sounds terrific. Now, of course, as we say, we are rapidly getting towards the time when it's all going to take place. So if people are hearing this and thinking, this sounds fantastic, how am I going to get to go to see it? How do people access tickets?
So tickets are available on our website, so www.madfa.im, M-A-D-F.im. I should say that tickets are restricted. We're only allowing an audience of 150 per night. So if people are keen, they should try and get their tickets early. I know it's typical of the Manx public to be a little bit, and I'll come and I'll get my tickets the week before. But we're already starting to see tickets go. So if people are keen to come and see it, then they absolutely should buy their tickets soon. They're fairly reasonable. They're only £15 each. Half the profits will be going to hospice, and hospice will be there in the evenings with their little coffee van to provide some refreshment. But if people want to bring their own, as long as they're portable and they take their rubbish away with them, then they're more than welcome to bring their own refreshments as well.
Marvellous. You can bring a bottle or something. Are they just technically, because I know someone will say, can I bring a beer or a bottle of wine? Is that allowed, or do they have to bring
absolutely
teas and coffee?
Although I would ask, just like the Wimbledon umpire did earlier on in the week, not to pop their corks in the middle of the action.
Quite right too, quite right. And good for the whole family. As you were saying, you're moving around, so you need to be relatively able to move from A to B, and presumably that might preclude very young children or the like. Or
well, we're starting the performance at 6:00, and then they'll go on till dusk, so sort of 8:30, no, probably more 9:00, 9:30. So you'd need to think about whether your child would be still awake at 9:30 in the evening. But we're not, you know, discouraging anybody to come. I understand from Government House that they often have events where people have mobility issues and are able to move quite freely around the grass and what have you, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Wonderful. And three performances?
Three performances, Friday the 5th, Saturday the 6th and Sunday the 7th of September.
Terrific. Looking forward to it already. It sounds great. As Sharon says, don't hang around. The tickets are limited by dint of what it is, so don't expect to turn up on the night, just wander in there and get in. It almost certainly isn't going to happen. If you like the sound of it, book in advance. Make sure you get your place in there. Give us that place again where you go for the tickets.
It's www.madford.im, and we are really looking forward to seeing everybody there.
Don't say I didn't warn you. Get your tickets now. To finish, a little more from the wonderful Olga Versich from Ramsey Music Society. We heard from Olga last week a little of the history of the society and some of its immediate programme of classical recitals, but I was keen to hear more from her about what else was planned later this year and into next.
Our concert in September, on the 22nd, Monday the 22nd, is a special concert and very dear to my heart, because in 2020, when it was still COVID, in the UK, we were very lucky that here we could put some concerts with local performers. And it was my idea to start showcasing young talents of the Isle of Man to perform. And that first concert proved to be successful. We had a lot of very positive comments, including comments from the then governor, Sir Richard Gosney. And we were encouraged to continue this trend to invite young performers. So our concert on the 22nd will have, as we plan, young pianists, young vocalists, and several instrumentalists, including those who are playing woodwind and brass instruments. And it will be a real chance for Manx audience to hear young performers in a professional concert.
Beautiful. And then in October?
And in October, we have our second Italian performer. In June, we welcomed the Italian guitarist from Turin. And this time, we are welcoming an Italian pianist called Ida Pelliccioli. And she now is established in Paris, but he's coming special from France to perform for the Ramsey Music Society, an interesting program of some French music and some Viennese classics as well. And we hope that, again, people will enjoy, A, to have an international performer, and also, B, will enjoy the program that she selected for us.
How far ahead do you actually have to plan the concerts? Are you sort of always 6 months ahead or a year ahead or further maybe?
We are very grateful to the Arts Council for their support, and we need to give them an idea of what funding we might expect for the next season. So I always try to complete our season for the following year by October, so we have a good idea of what costs will be involved. And I booked 4 concerts out of 6 by now. And I can tell you that our first concert in April 2026 will be a Maltese harp concert.
Wow.
We have a Maltese special appearance. And he's a very famous harpist who played for Queen Elizabeth II during her visits to Malta. And he played for a lot of dignitaries in Malta as well. His name is Jacob Portelli. And we are very much looking forward to welcoming him. And then we also in September invited back a Japanese pianist called Hiroaki Takanuchi. He played for us in 2021. So with 5-year break, we are hoping to have him back to perform again for us. Plus some other concerts that we hope we again in October next year, 2026, are very privileged to have a preliminary agreement with extremely famous, or I shouldn't say extremely world famous, Croatian guitarist Nemanja Bogunović, who had performed for the Ramsey Music Society in 2019 to great success. He is amazing to watch as well as to listen. So I hope guitar lovers will come to that concert next year too.
When it comes to actually planning the program, do you think of who you'd like to get? Do you sort of look at your contacts and see who's available or look at young people coming through the conservatoires and such like? How do you actually plan out your programmes?
I try to include 2 solo piano performances because that's what our audience seem to like. And then we try to include either unusual solo guitar is always popular. So we try to have once a year a guitar solo, be it somebody from Great Britain or further afield. We also try to have at least 1 string duo, maybe cello, maybe violin, depends on the year. And then this year, for instance, first time in many, many years, we had an oboe and piano because we like to bring unusual combination. So next year we will have a harp, and I'm in negotiations with an Austrian flautist who is also world renowned. And I hope she would be able to come to perform in June next year for us. So the combination is between piano solo and popular instruments like guitar, violin, cello to provide variety. I also try to invite international musicians, not just UK musicians, as I meet a lot of people in international festivals where I'm playing myself. And that gives me a chance to establish personal rapport with them and invite them in my personal capacity to the Isle of Man, which always helps. Some of them stay with us, And I always try to show our beautiful island to them to encourage them to come either as tourists or as performers for future concerts.
Dual role you've got there, Olga. A dual role, yes. Promoting the Isle of Man as well as wonderful music. It's a little gem in the crown up north, the Ramsey Music Society, bringing these wonderful musicians here to play for us. If people want to find out more, you can go on the Facebook site. Is there somewhere you can find the details?
There is a Facebook page called Ramsey Music Society. We also have a website, also called Ramsey Music Society. I try to put articles before every concert to our Manx newspaper's correspondent, Adam Morton, who very kindly also puts a feature for our concerts for people to come. And then it's word of mouth. We have a mailing list, which is no obligation mailing list. And for people who are interested in what is happening and what is forthcoming, then we do send 2 or 3 weeks in advance an information about the next concert and where to get tickets, which is at the door. We don't sell tickets online. It's very old-fashioned. Tickets at the door, £15 in cash, and everybody is welcome to come. Under 18 are free, but we don't have senior discount because we'll never get any money otherwise.
It's such a great society, and a credit to Olga, her colleagues and predecessors. It's been going for so long. Anyone who's ever been involved in promoting and organising musical events or concerts knows there's an awful lot of blood, sweat and tears involved, and usually more money going out than coming in. You're not going to get rich quick, or more likely ever. Long may they continue, and do support them. I'll try and get there as much as I can. That's about it for now. We'll be hearing all about a special anniversary and exhibition for the Man in Art Group in Ramsey next week. See you then. Be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Be moo.